This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Without his priestly robes on.
Same. Thank you.
We understand, George, that you wanted to play this part, that you went for this part. That's what we heard from the producer. True?
That is true. When my show was over, I got an email from Sandra Bullock who said, now you have to do something that nobody would expect you to do. And this is a... this was a fantastic opportunity to be able to break that kind of TV sitcom vision and to do something with tremendous actors, Adriana and Luke and Rada. And, you know, when I met Mark, we talked about his pain and his loss and my recovery from kidney disease, which is unsure because as a transplant recipient, I mean, you don't know if that organ is going to stay in your body or if your body's going to reject it. So there's a bit of spirituality that, whether you have it or not, the minute I laid on that gurney before they put me out and you're completely naked as you came into the world and you think, all right, this is it, whether you either believe or you don't believe. And I think if you want to become healthy, and even if you're not healthy, that you have to have a certain belief. And since that point, I've become more spiritual in my approach to life and more appreciative of every day and more helpful to people who are sick and more compassionate to people who are not well and invalids and people who are older that I didn't have before. And I think in the power of being a celebrity and being a Latino that you can generate a lot of good for people and especially Latinos, because so much of our culture is about waiting to find out when something is bad instead of going out and finding something that is bad early and being able to treat it. So on that respect, to be able to play a part so calm and so powerful and surrounded by really good actors was a great opportunity for me.
Did you model them on somebody?
I did. You know, I went to this church, St. Charles in North Hollywood, and there was a father there who I spoke to for about 90 minutes. And in the rehearsal of this movie with Luke and Adriana, and I didn't really feel like I was connected to the part. And then when I spent the hour and a half with this priest, I left with a wonderful sense of calm and a sense of strength and a quietness. He was. Great for the fact that he didn't really talk much, and the more I talked, the calmer he became. And it's almost like being interrogated, where you go, "Look, I wasn't there," and he just kind of sat there and he said, "So what about this movie? What do you think that a priest is about? What do you think that we do? What do you think that our jobs are? And how do you think we affect people's lives?" And you know, I asked him if somebody had come to him and said that. You know, the sidewalk was crying, what would you do? And he said, well, I wouldn't tell them that it wasn't crying. I would just ask them what they see and what their own beliefs are. There was and then I left, and I remember walking to the car going, I think I got it now. I think I completely understand.
Why did you have to do something unexpected?
I don't want to get into this business. I didn't get into this business to feed... like preconceived notions of Latinos. I've turned down every part that was bad or derogatory or stereotypical, even in really good movies. And I wanted to do something that was different because I know how hard it is to be on TV every day for probably much the rest of the history of TV, and to be seen one way and really want to have your approach to acting be a little wider. So that's why I wanted to do this. And then I did this. I did, you know, Swing Vote with Kevin Costner.
We were just talking about that.
Yeah.
In Swing Vote, you play...
John Sweeney. Great name for a Latino. John Sweeney. We left it the same. It wasn't supposed to be a Latino actor. That was nice. I got that part from... Kevin asked me to be in the movie. And he plays a, you know, overbearing manager who wants somebody to sell out their integrity for the story, which is a little bit about what TV news has become. I mean, you're going to see it in the John Edwards story that's going to probably be in the news the next week, and we've seen it before, and the deterioration of someone's life right before your eyes.
So you're the manager at the TV station?
At the
station.
TV station, yeah.
And did you base that on somebody you worked with on television?
Well, I was in radio and I've been in TV long enough to know that there are some probably really disgusting people in the business. I worked with a few of them, and I took a little bit of them and created this guy who, you know, when we did the premiere and when we talked to news people, including some from the biggest news shows, Access Hollywood and Extra and Entertainment Tonight, that they all know somebody like that, somebody that would sell out their own mother for the ability to be able to break this huge story.
You mean people who work in TV are not all ethical?
It's hard to believe. It's unfortunate that so little is based on fact. That somebody can go on the internet and write a completely false, I mean, I don't have to tell you guys that, and it can be taken for truth, and by the time it's dispelled, it's already done its damage.
I thought it was really impressive how you played this man of the cloth, and he was you found a really good balance between, he's obviously a man of faith, and he's not just totally embracing the idea of this miraculous thing, but he's not discounting it either, and dealing with Luke's character and everything. How did you manage that?
There's a little bit of a change in the backyard when he's trying to explain to him that the blood was real. So you see it for a second that I'm about to go over it completely to Adriana's side and say that it is a miracle, that this was blood. That's the crazy part. And then Luke, you know, breaks the wall down. In talking to the father, in knowing that it's not your place to confirm nor deny somebody's beliefs was where that came from. To put on the collar and to wear black and to walk around, that uniform, there's a lot of respect in that thing. Even as a comedian who's been really outlandish, and then you get into this thing where you're wearing this 8-inch piece of plastic around your neck, it immediately calms you down. It immediately gives you a certain amount of respect for the uniform.
Did you ever walk off set even by accident and get treated a little differently, people not realizing it was you, but seeing the cloth?
I did. You know, we shot in Downey, and I walked back to the set because it was the vans go back and forth, and they're not sometimes always there. And I said, oh, I'll just walk. And in crossing the street, people would—they didn't know it was me, so they'd cross and they'd stop, and you just see cars almost like hit each other, and you just kind of wave, and they just immediately like, all right, we got everything's got to stop, we got to let this guy through, and if it said don't walk, and I was walking, and they all kind of just stop, and then they all go.
Did you ever think about being a priest?
I never did. Never crossed my mind. Never. Not only would I not pass the background check, I fought Catholic school and catechism tooth and nail. I made my first Holy Communion, but I had to go. I got thrown out of my class. I had to go and have special classes every Wednesday for an hour all summer in 1974. Every Wednesday, because I didn't go, I wasn't going along with the program.
And what was your problem with the program?
I was, you know, an only child, and I hated everything, even at 13.
So you were kind of like the 2-year-old who always says no to everything.
Anything that was forced on me, I've always rejected. I always rejected an attitude or a force. Somebody forcing you to do something, or somebody telling you you should do this. I've always wanted to do my own things, and I grew up in a place where they tried to have you live their life and not have you live your own life.
But now you're embracing it more from your own life experiences.
I really am. You know, I thought that my life had no value when I started to become successful in this business, and that wasn't currency, and that everything new was going to be what was going to take me to a success. But I learned in the stand-up and talking about things, that it was everything that happened to me, good and bad, in my life that was actually going to fuel the success of the future, instead of like having everybody know me and that was going to be what was going to be great about being successful. What's great about being successful is that it wasn't easy, everything is hard, that I didn't quit. Even as a kid, I was a quitter, and I quit on people, and I quit on everything that I liked, and I quit on baseball when I was in high school, and I loved baseball, and it meant a lot to quit, and that my grandfather would always tell me that I was a quitter, and he was right, and all those things that you really have to face at some point to be able to get out of your own way.
Speaking of your future, you have a few things coming up. Could you talk about
your next? I'm almost embarrassed after talking about this one. I'm changing collars from Beverly Hills Chihuahua. I've gone from the 8-inch collar to the Beverly Hills Chihuahua, and the fact that Disney would invest so much in a project about Chihuahuas. And if you've seen the trailer, it will either annoy you and you'll hate that you ever saw it, or you'll be a young kid and you won't be able to get the song out of your head.
I saw the trailer in a theater packed with kids in front of, I think, Wally, and they ate the crap up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you think...
Crap.
Yeah, do you...
It's great crap, yeah.
Yeah. Do you think this is going to be a big hit for the people that they're targeting?
Absolutely. I absolutely believe that. And not only that, I went in and supported this viral campaign where I just read this manifesto from this Chihuahua about how no longer were they going to be used as toys or accessories or be carried on their laps or be dressed in ugly sweaters and answer to names like, you know, Fifi and Fufu, and that they wanted to stand up and they wanted to be proud and that they were warriors and Viva Chihuahuas and, you know, it's our time. And much like... In a sense, the Latinos, it is our time. We're powerful people. The fact that Disney would invest this much of their own machine, that powerful Disney machine, in actors like Luis Guzman and Cheech and Andy Garcia, Plaza del Domingo, Edward James Olmos, myself, you know, Drew Barrymore, and have it appeal to the mainstream audience, but yet be important for us to have our own. Our own place, and Piolín, who is a radio disc jockey, is probably, without question, the most successful radio personality. He may go down as the most important radio personality, because his audience right now is 28 million. Mm-hmm. And that's an underlying population that not a lot of people value. But Barack Obama's been in his studio, and I think that's going to be the difference in
Beverly Hills Chihuahua being a hit.
Yes.
Oh. Edward James Olmos is very—he's very passionate about his beliefs and empowering. And he talked about taking the Battlestar Galactica role because of, you know, his character and being Latino. And did you get to work with him at all? And
but, you know, I worked with him. He did my show. He was on the last episode of my TV show. He played the guy who bought the factory that I worked at and was going to move it to Mexico. Yeah, and I've been a friend of his for probably almost 20 years now, and inspiring to me because of what he is and because of his social relevance, and every time something happened, you know, Eddie was there, you know, so I've taken a little bit of that from him and moved forward with it. But yeah, I think there's an underestimated value in the Latino audience that I think Beverly Hills Chihuahua will benefit from, when a lot of other movies don't put us in the movies and we still go to the movies. So if we support this movie the way we can, you will absolutely see the needle move on this thing.
So what else do you have? He mentioned there was a bunch of stuff.
So I did Swing Vote in this, and then Beverly Hills Chihuahua, and then just I'm continuing my tour, my stand-up tour, and you know, I'll find other projects. There's something I'm producing with Selma Hayek I just got the first draft of the script, that I think that's also a very powerful relationship, her and I, producing things. So
how powerful.
So there's not a couple of actors like us to be associated with her, to be able to get a film made and get it out there for everybody to see would be powerful.
Now, you've also got a family film, Shannon's Rainbow, coming out also.
You know what? I did not do that movie.
You didn't?
No. I was supposed to do it, and I did not.
You always have to IMDb.
Yes.
Pardon me?
Accurate IMDb.
I wasn't in Killer Tomatoes, and I was not in Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
You've directed in the past. Is there any thought to you directing in the future?
I don't think so. I directed my show, a few episodes of my show, because I thought it was important for myself to take the opportunity to put myself in the union, the DGA, when I knew that nobody around Warner Brothers or Disney would probably suggest that I do it. That I wanted to take the opportunity to do that, and in that we took the opportunity to give a lot of people an opportunity to step forward that probably wouldn't have had it the other way, because it is so hard to move up. So being in the Writers Guild and the DGA, I don't think
and
I have
SAG.
And SAG, yes, and AFTRA, and Costco. Remember Costco? and I bought $100 coffee bean. Card, I put $100 on it. They ran it, and the guy goes, "Oh, I guess nobody ever puts $100 on that card." My balance was 96. He's like, "Oh, big time." But I don't think I have. When you see somebody like Mark direct a film, I don't have the vision that you need to have to be a director.
What is your stand-up material about these days?
Political? It's political. It's very political about. The campaign and about immigration and really about our place in America. And so much of America is viewed from black and white, and as the largest growing population in the United States, at some point somebody's gonna realize that there's this sleeping giant that when it wakes up is not going to be happy to be ignored. And then you watch CNN, which I do all the time, and they have this documentary called Black in America, and it's their most powerful and popular documentary. Well, Brown in America is also very important.
You know, I saw you do stand-up maybe 10 years ago, and there was always a little bit of Latin-themed humor, but certainly not as much as there is now. Was there a point where you decided it was okay to explore that realm and make that the focus?
Yeah, you know, I didn't want, in order to separate yourself, you're going to have to break a few eggs to be able to make your place. And I don't mind that my material is driven by my culture, because it's a culture that needs to be explained. When you listen to some of the material, it's relevant to whoever you are, whether you're Jewish, or I've seen people from Israel and people who are Indian and Asian say, you know, that's my grandmother, that's my family, that's the way we reacted. And once I realized that it was across the board, fundamentally people are people, that it didn't matter to me that it just came out from my opinions.
Why has Lowrider always been your theme song?
Lowrider has not always been my theme song. When the show first started, we needed a theme song, and I thought it's such an anthem. I mean, it's the beginning of that song is so great, and it's so identifiable to that one song, that I instead of having kind of this corny TV song made up about us, or you know, one of those Silver Spoons or Family Matters or Growing Pains song, that I wanted something that had some relevance. I think Lowrider has relevance to, and War is predominantly an African American band, so it has relevance to some strong cultural ties that I have.
So that wasn't always introducing your stand-up before.
No, and now it's just it's great.
Do you miss the grind of TV?
I miss the people. Yeah, I miss the actors that I saw every day and the crew people that I saw every day. It was a fantastic opportunity and a completely unexpected thing for me. I mean, I used to think, because of the way I looked, that I would never be on TV. If you look at some things that I said in the early 90s, that I said, you see this face will never be on TV. And I was wrong in one regard, that this face would never sell product. That's true. This face has not been asked to endorse anything, Verizon or Fiji.
Maybe Coffee Bean.
Maybe Coffee Bean will, but it has not been commercially discovered yet. Which I think it should be, but to look like this, you know, you can look like Mario Lopez and be a success. You can look like Eva Longoria and be a success. You can look like Jennifer Lopez and be a success. You can look like Antonio Banderas and be a success. You can look like Penelope Cruz and be a success. Try looking like this and making it in Hollywood. That's talent. When you look like this, when you're brown and you look kind of Indian and you look Mexican and you're not sure if somebody's Hawaiian, that's success, baby.
would you go back to TV and do another show? Or
There's a potential, another opportunity to do TV, but I don't think it's going to be in the sitcom form. Sitcoms are a little bit waning. I think CBS has done a fantastic job of nurturing the sitcom and keeping it alive. But ABC has completely drank the reality TV Kool-Aid, and I'm not sure that's necessarily going to be the strongest thing for that network when all those things fade away. You know, Who Survived the Japanese Game Show, or Wipeout, or Wife Swap, or Super Nanny, or The Bachelor. All those things are going to go away at some point, and you're not going to have a strong content value to replace it.
You mentioned you might have another opportunity. Would that be with, I guess, another network or HBO?
It's not going to be. It's not going to be ABC. I think my work at ABC is done. I even deleted it from my DirecTV. It just goes 6 to 8. There's no 7. But HBO, I'm going to do another HBO special next year, and maybe one more tour of comedy, and then I'm going to wrap it up.
Nope. No more comedy.
I'm going to retire, yes.
No, you're way too young.
No, I'm going to retire.
A lot of people talk.
Remember, I have one kidney, man, and I want to enjoy my life. I want to enjoy my life. I don't want to be defined by being in this business and working the rest of my life. I got one kidney. It may last 20 years, it may last 20 days. So I'm going to try to, I have to enjoy myself a little bit.
So you're not going to do the Brett Favre and have a...
I'm not going to cry at my retirement party and then upset everybody to let them know I'm coming back and then end up getting traded to the Jets. I'm not going to do that.
Did you know Bernie Mac at all?
I did.
Were you surprised to hear that?
Well, it's unfortunate, the passing of somebody so young and so really specifically a comedian, someone who paid their dues, who worked hard, who was maybe the least known when Kings of Comedy came out. He was probably the least known, but maybe the funniest of them all. And to have success in stand-up and TV and in movies, and to be a great husband and a wonderful father to his kids, is a legacy that would inspire anybody to do well. And he will be sorely missed, and as all of us comedians are, soldiers, and have been out there for almost 30 years as he was, he will be sorely missed by me and by everybody in comedy.
What would you like your legacy to be years from now?
I want my legacy to be somebody who came from nowhere and ended up someplace.
How will you be enjoying your retirement?
I'm going to golf a lot. I'm gonna raise my daughter, who's 12, because it's important to be a father to her, because I didn't have a father. Even last night, we watched a couple of movies together, and it was fun. That's fun, and it's something that when I do it for her, I knew that I watched TV a lot by myself as a kid when my grandparents were watching the same channel in the other room. So that's time well spent, and you realize how fast time goes and how big kids get, and then they move away from you, and it's important.
How do you get her ready to go back to school at the end of summer?
Well, I tell her that Nick Jonas said that she has to be in bed by 8:30.
She's
complete. She's a complete Jonas Brothers. I think she's even actually had my picture cut out of all of my pictures of the house and had Nick Jonas's picture. There's a picture in her room of a couple, like a bridal couple, and she got these two pictures and cut their heads and put them together. It's hilarious. But that, like, she wants to, you know, marry a musician, which would make every father happy.
Can you tell the difference between, I know there's three of them.
I actually can. You're gonna let that be the last question? I can tell which one. I live in that neighborhood that is... That is the tween Beverly Hills. Nick Jonas and the Jonas Brothers, Ashley Tisdale, Hannah Montana, aka Miley Cyrus, all in my neighborhood. Oh. So when you see Jenny Garth and Hilary Duff, and Brooke Burns, and when they see me and Dave Stewart from the Eurythmics, they're like, ah, this is the old guy's stuff.
Aren't you like a cool dad, though? I mean, you're in a Disney movie coming up. Can't you hook that up with...
Doesn't matter, no. It's when they know, when somebody knows you really well, the cool, you're not as cool. It's when somebody doesn't know you really well, they think you're cool, and then when they know you, they're like, hey, that's cool.
No, I was going to say...
Come on! Go ahead.
No, I was going to say with your daughter and the fact that you have the Disney stuff and it's Disney's. Can't you use the mojo and get her into like a concert?
I did. I actually got her to see the Jonas Brothers at Staples Center. I did not go. That was my that was. I said, you go. You're not going. I'm not going.
Yeah, but didn't she like have that newfound like you know, she
newfound respect.
She's using me. Yes, using me to get to them. It's nice to be the person, the third wheel in that relationship.
Muchas
gracias a ustedes. Thank you.
Thank you.